Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored KPFT-FM. Along with our team, co-hosts Mary Edgerton, Warren Holloman, Hank Rubicek, engineer Nicole Rocherlin, intern Tatanya Gago, production assistant Teddy Puig, and last but certainly never least, we have Floyd the Wonder Dog, who is asleep in my lap. I am Greg Audell, co-host of this gem of a program, and I am absolutely thrilled to be your host for the next hour. Each and every week, we share the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys from the familiar to the foreign. And we get to experience these journeys through the eyes of the storyteller. So sit back and relax, just as we do every Wednesday. Tonight, our studio is filled with gifted storytellers who will share a bit of themselves by delivering narratives about family. You know, that unchosen lot that can bring both blessing and curses to our lives. Stephanie Twyford owns and operates Legacy Multimedia, dedicated to preserving the legacies that define life to help families, individuals, and organizations chronicle personal histories through life stories and multimedia formats that ultimately connect generations. How cool is that? In 2012, Stephanie turned the lens on her own family and her father's profile as a known street photographer. Her documentary, Martin Elkford, an American...
Elkort.
Say it again?
Elkort.
Elkort, thank you. An American Mirror, screened mid-2014 at the Museum of Fine Arts, Houston. So impressive. Followed by other screenings around the U.S., and has won a 2014 Gold Remy Award for the Best Documentary from World Best International Film Festival. I am a documentary freak, so I can't wait to go out and watch this. I am so looking forward to learning about Stephanie's dad and their journey together tonight. Gaetan Pauls is the founder and executive director of the Pink Giraffe House, a home in Montrose for teenagers who don't have a safe place in their lives. And Sarah Murphy is one of the most important people in the city of Houston, in my opinion. She is a volunteer, and volunteers have been what have made this city the amazing place it is from our very founding to Hurricane Harvey. And I tip my hat to you. It's easy to recognize a problem. It's a lot harder to take your time and do something about it.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, I agree.
And this is your very first radio broadcast, isn't it, Sarah?
It is,
unlike Stephanie, who's an old pro and has been on our very program before.
A few times.
A few times, yes. Well, I am just thrilled to have all of you with us tonight. To me, the confounding issues of family just make for some of the most interesting and compelling stories. You know, they tend to be the stories that I focus on in my life. They're just the easiest, I think, for me to get in touch with those very raw emotions, whether they're good, bad, confusing, or all the things that go into family relationships. Tonight, our three tellers will cover the good, the bad, and the ugly dynamics that children have to navigate. You know, this life is not smooth sailing for anyone. And I think, you know, we learn some of our most important lessons from those people that have been assigned to us since birth. And we got to navigate this life together, and it ain't always easy.
Right.
As we mentioned, you know, Stephanie, you've been on this show before, and you've talked about, you know, your photographer father, which is something we share in common. My parents were both photographers, among other things.
Interesting.
It is. It's a very interesting way to grow up. You know, I don't have any idea how many weddings I've been to in my life. That was just what we did on weekends.
Oh, they were wedding photographers?
Among other things. Sports photographers, wedding photographers, you know, and I think it's a great way for a kid to grow up. Do you agree?
I do. I mean, unfortunately, you're stuck in front of a camera a lot posing, but
or in a
that's
dark
not
room.
So bad.
Or in a dark room.
Yeah.
So you have talked to us about your dad, and you're certainly no stranger to feeling family issues as a videographer. You document family episodes.
Yeah, that's my company. We do family histories and help other help families tell the story of their family. And whether it's an individual or several generations, my goal is to connect the people who are on film with future generations that have yet to be born so that they understand where they came from, what their family's value systems were, you know, what the genesis of the family was, what the family lores were, and basically also get an opportunity to see these people on screen. Because when you watch video of your great-grandfather, you suddenly see yourself in him like, oh, I have the same shrug of my shoulders, or look at those curly ears that I inherited. And, you know, it's a very powerful experience.
Well, and for those of us who have family albums and enjoy looking through them, how much more interesting would it be if there was something more than a three-word blurb about someone?
Yeah, exactly. I always joke around that I can tell you about my grandfather. He was short, bald, and smoked cigars. You'll have a picture in your head.
Right.
But until you actually see a video of him, you're not going to really get a full essence of who that is.
Well, there's a picture in my grandmother's baby album. She was born in 1909, and there's a picture of this extremely old couple holding her, and they were her grandparents. The woman was 49 and the man was 52. I would love to know more about their story, you know, just a different world than ours. And you're not only a storyteller by profession, but you're also a longtime member of the Houston Storytellers Guild, aren't you?
I am.
What prompted you to join the guild?
How did that happen? You know, I met Hank Rubicek. And
that's where all the trouble starts, is when you meet Hank Rubicek.
He drags us all in like a cat with a cat with a bird. Yeah, so Hank invited me to come, and the next thing I know, I mean, it's a fascinating group, and you know, to me, oral storytelling tradition is so much fun and so empowering. And the opportunity to sit and listen to other people tell stories, whether about themselves or things that they make up or fantasy stories, it's very entertaining.
Well, what is it that intrigues you about crafting a good story? Because good stories, storytellers know, good stories rarely just happen. It's just like making a cake or anything else. There's a process.
Yeah, there is. And there's three distinct stages of the story. There's what I refer to as the setup, which is the beginning of the story to get your attention. And then there's the middle of the story, which is where all
the turn.
The stuff happens. Yeah, all the good stuff. And then the ending, I think, is the most important part of the story. And we were talking about this last night at the Storytellers Guild about how most people tend to keep talking.
Yes.
They finish the story and then they go, so that's my story. And so, you know, that was really an interesting thing that happened to me. And it's like, just stop talking. Like, finish the story and, you know, be quiet for a second.
Well, it's so funny you say that, because I find the thing that we have to repeat constantly, whether it's to guests or whether I'm, you know, giving a talk on storytelling, it's like, folks, it's pretty simple. Stories have beginnings, middles, and ends.
The bell curve.
Yeah. And when it ends, the story is over. And it should be clear when it ends. If it's a good ending, then it is clear that the story is over. And you don't need to say, and that's my story.
So that was that.
Yeah.
And so that's what, so that happened.
And that's all. That's not a good way to end a story. I'm certain you've never ended a story like that.
No, never.
Now, why is it that you think that, like, your career and your downtime revolve around stories?
You know,
did it happen gradually?
I think so. I was definitely a student of my father, and my father's photography was telling stories through single images.
Mm.
And if you look at any of his images, which you can on his website, Martin Elkort, ELKORT.com.
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time? That is www.
Martin, MARTIN, Elkort, ELKORT.com.
I'll be checking it out when I get home.
Yes, thank you. So, but if you look at his pictures, you can see, it's photographs, you can see entire stories and you can understand what's going on there. There's a lot of nuance. And so I grew up on that. And as the story I'm going to tell you tonight, I had a large experience, a frequent experience of developing stories with my dad. And I don't think I would identify them back then as stories because they didn't start with once upon a time and end with, you know.
That's another tip, folks. A beginning does not have to begin once upon a time.
That's right. That's right. But it, to me, it's fascinating because I think ultimately my goal as a person on this planet has been to really understand human behavior. And
there's, no easy subject there.
Yeah, so there's psychology, and I originally approached it from that perspective, but I found that really boring. So the storytelling is more the underside of people's lives.
It's I like that.
And the morals and what triggers them. And
yeah, because just what happened is not actually a very interesting story. I mean, the why is where it gets interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? Now I can't wait. I'm ready to hear your next story on So What's Your Story?
Are we there?
We are there.
Okay, so my story that I'm going to tell you tonight is called The End of the Shtick. And, you know, I realize there's a lot of ethnic words in my story. So, you know, according to the dictionary, a shtick is defined as a comic routine or style of performance. And it's associated with a particular person. And in this case, it's my dad. So my dad, his name was Martin, went to art school in the late 1940s in New York City. And he became very good friends with a man named Marvin, who became one of his closest friends and was fondly referred to thereafter as the Marvster. So both my dad and Marvin came from similar New York City immigrant Jewish families and had a very similar sense of humor. And at that time, they were both cutting their teeth imitating comedians such as Sid Caesar, Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, and other what are referred to as sketch comics. And they were basically their own veritable Catskills shtick as they adopted facial contortions, body language, and over-exaggerated Jewish accents to parody pretty much everyone and everything they could think of. So if you don't know where the Catskills are, the Catskills is an area in the Hudson Valley of New York where during the period between the early 1920s and around the mid-1970s, summer resorts attracted vacationing Jews from New York City. And many famous Jewish comedians got their start there on what was referred to as the Borscht Belt. So you remember Dirty Dancing, the movie Dirty Dancing? That took place in a resort in the Catskills around the time of the 70s. So after college and then marriage, my parents eventually settled in Los Angeles, which is where I grew up, and Marvin and his family ended up moving upstate New York. So visits between our families was infrequent, but we could always tell when Marvin was on the phone as my dad would immediately go into his shtick voice. Hello, Marvin! And he would, that was the hello. And he would yell and there would be much laughter and joking until the call was over. And my dad loved Marvin's calls, and his fake accent would continue for hours after the call as we were regaled with stories and jokes from their pranks together from many years before. So one example was Marvin had a cousin named Sid Beck that used to hang out with them frequently. And one time Sid was in the back seat of the car while Marvin was driving and my dad was up front. Sid made some comment, and Marvin turned around and retorted, "Hey, you, Sid Beck." So forever after that, it was like, sit down. So forever after that, if you were in the car and you stood up, my dad would give you that look and you knew immediately that he would be followed by, "Hey, you, Sid Beck." So eventually, as I got older, my dad and I collected our own experiences that became part of our mutual shtick. It created an empathetic bond with a multiplex of coined phrases, jokes, and gags that we used to cheer each other up, release steam, and basically tighten our own emotional bond together. So when I was about 10, my dad and I used to regularly go into this office supply store. And my dad loved buying office supplies. I still don't really understand what it was about, you know, a Rolodex and a stapler that made him happy, but it was his thing. So when we came in one day, I was about 10, and there was a new man working there, and he had a very odd greeting. When we walked in the door, he turned to us and he said, "Can I help you?" And so the first time that happened, we made a note of it on the way out. My dad said, hey, can I help you? So the second time, I could see my dad giving me that look. And after that, it became part of our shtick. If I was doing anything and looked like I needed help, he would offer, can I help you? And of course, I'd said the same thing to him. Occasionally, Marvin and my dad's shtick material would enter in mine and my dad's shtick, like the Sid Beck joke. And there was a family shtick in our house that was broader, including my mom and siblings. And I know my dad had shticks with both my brother and sister that were individual to them. Often all of these would overlap, but my dad and mine was, of course, special to us, and in a way became our language of intimacy in our relationship. So 2016 was a rough year for me. Both of my parents passed away within 4 months of each other. And there was a point several months after my dad died when I realized there was no one to share that shtick with any longer. My brother and sister got some of the jokes. My husband doesn't have our bizarre sense of humor. And my kids think I'm a bit crazy anyway. So it dawned on me, the shtick is over. Mm. Over. Mm. So not long after that realization, I gave Marvin a call. And I shared with him my observations about the evolution of our respective shticks. And I told him how thankful I was for having had that amazing relationship with my dad and providing each other with years of comic relief, because it meant a lot to both of them. And I told Marvin how sad I was to realize that we each, both Marvin and I, had reached the end of some proverbial line. And Marvin, with emotion choking his voice, agreed and thanked me for my call. And I realized we were both at a loss.
Oh, wow, Stephanie, that was absolutely beautiful. You know, I feel like it's so easy for all of us to fall into the trap of speaking of those we love to have passed on with sadness. And I love about your story that you celebrated him with humor and joy. And, you know, particularly since it's so fresh, but I think that's how all of us would want to be remembered.
Right.
You know, that's actually a really interesting point. My dad died very suddenly, and he was very present up until the very end. And he told me that he wanted his funeral to be funny, that everyone had to tell jokes.
Well, you really did capture him in your story then.
Yeah, he was a very funny man. And the rabbi that gave his, you know, whatever it was at the funeral, stood up there and he said, I don't think I've ever led a funeral and told a joke and opened up with a joke. But he told one. I can't remember what the joke was. But, you know, it was great.
I feel like it would be disrespectful to someone like your dad. Of course we're going to have sadness and you're going to mourn and you're going to have your downtimes. But I think it would be disrespectful to remember him exclusively with sadness.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like that's who he was at all.
No, not at all. Not at all.
After hearing your story, I really wish I had known him. I mean, he just sounds like, I mean, he was a great guy.
Yeah, he was. Well, when you watch the documentary, we can talk about that because you'll get a really strong sense of his personality in that.
Well, let's think like your dad. Describe a snapshot of him and that depicts who he really was.
You know, he was a very, very bright man, and he had a lot of... He was very intellectually curious, and he had this memory. He remembered everything. He would memorize stuff, and, you know, you'd walk around with him in New York City or something, and he'd point at a building, and he'd say, you see that building there? That was designed by blah, 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 1923, and it was designed in order to keep the wind from blowing, the women's skirts
up. I wish I was that smart.
Yeah, he was very
See,
smart.
I can hear something like that about a building. I'll go, wow, that is so cool. I'll walk by it the next day. Someone will tell me about it. I'll go, wow, that is so cool.
Right.
You know, I'm not able to retain it like I wish I was.
Right. Well, the thing about him that was really so frustrating, I think, for me as his daughter, was he came from very immigrant, you know, from immigrant stock. And a lot of immigrant families were very insecure and felt... you know, sort of this unworthiness. And my dad suffered from that. And I think that kind of held him back from being much greater than he might have been if he had been brought up by a family that took their place in the United States for granted. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's so hard to second guess that.
Of
because,
course.
I mean, those are the same things that made him who he was.
Of course.
You know?
Of course. He was very well loved and very well respected.
Yeah. If that can be said about any of us at the end of our days, I think that is crossing the finish line an absolute winner.
Yep. Yep, that's very true.
Well, my friends, you are listening to So What's Your Story on 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. My guest storytellers are Stephanie Twyford, Gaetan Pauls, and Sarah Murphy. Tonight, we are missing our engineer, our cheerleader, and our enforcer, Nicole Rocherlin, but we are in the very capable and occasionally goofy hands of Tatiana Gago and Teddy Puig. How do you feel about being completely in charge of this internationally renowned program, knowing that one mistake will mean disaster for all of us?
Well, it feels pretty good.
No pressure on you.
So, I mean, we're running the show today. And goofy?
A little bit goofy. Really
goofy?
Yeah, a little bit goofy. You're not really going to argue with that, are you? Teddy, how do you feel about back there behind the controls?
Feels right, Greg.
It feels right. Yeah, that's it. You want to be in right. control. Teddy and I have actually been friends for 1 year and 2 days. We met at a Henry Rollins, I guess, concert, stream of consciousness. And we were waiting by his bus, and we're like, well, we waited for like an hour. So, then I dragged him to the radio station, and I am so proud to have both of y'all with us. In all honesty, you know, Tatiana, did I get it right?
Tatiana,
thank
close.
You. I'm getting closer. I'm working on it. But you started off as a guest, never thinking that you'd be running the program, huh?
Well, it was actually kind of an adventure for me to get on the show. I've been asking Dr. Rubicek to be on here because I've been so inspired to do so. And, well, it's fun to be here. It's great. I didn't think about it, but it's great.
What do you enjoy about hearing a good story? I mean, you've had a chance to hear a great many stories, but you've also shared some. What is it you like about both hearing and sharing a story?
Well, it's the impact that I get from these stories. And also, for my stories, I like to inspire, influence people in a positive way. Whenever I want to give a story, I want to make sure that it kind of gives like a shock factor, also in a good way.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you want to keep your audience thinking.
Absolutely.
And Teddy, you didn't come through us through the storytelling route, but you've certainly heard a lot of great stories while working with us for the last year. Are there any stories from the program that strongly affected you?
Well, there have been stories from Mary that I heard last time, especially with her choice of words, like gushing.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Teddy? Are you there?
A couple weeks ago about the relief workers doing all the flood relief, you know.
Oh, right.
You know, it always just hits so close to home.
It really did. It really did. And that's another thing about a great story is it makes the abstract tangible. And I hope that's something that we're able to do each and every week on this show. Has being part of this program spurred your interest in storytelling?
In telling stories?
Yeah.
Of course. You know, I feel like it's just made me all around a more charismatic person, you know?
I would say that.
Better to talk to you.
I think you're much more interesting than you were a year ago. Yeah, I would say that. And for those that don't know, Teddy is also a fire performer, which is pretty impressive. I've seen him, and he's got a massive hair on his head. I don't know how he keeps from catching it on fire, but that's just how good he is.
What is a fire performer?
Yeah, he twirls, he spits fire, he breathes fire. It's kind of amazing. I would love to have him demonstrate, but it really doesn't come across very well on radio. But maybe one day we'll do a Facebook, you know, Facebook Live, and we'll do a little demonstration from the studio. And the city is absolutely filled with storytellers. Tatiana, you let folks know where they can hear some of the best stories in the city of Houston?
So to start, everyone needs to follow us on Facebook. And please share our page with your friends, your family, your
yes.
lovers, and how Nicole would sometimes say, your enemies.
Yeah, share them with everybody. Yes.
On our page so everyone knows you like us. You really, really like us.
That's
we have
right.
program clips on YouTube and all our past So What's Your Story programs on the Houston Storytellers website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. Just go to the radio program link on their site and enjoy. The Guild is also our proud sponsor. Their swaps meet the fourth Tuesday of every month at Temple Emmanuel at 1500 Sunset. Also, don't miss our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of every month.
Thank you, Tatiana. I'm going to keep working on it. I'm going to get it. You do sound like a true professional at the moment, more than me.
Thank you, and I just got my voice back.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you saved it for us. Basically, everyone you're listening to tonight is suffering from some kind of illness or allergy, so just muddle with us. We're drinking water. We're drinking hot tea. We're doing the very best we can. I think the only one healthy here is Floyd the Wonder Dog.
Yeah, he's asleep.
And he's just sleeping through the show. He'll listen to it with me later. This is Greg Audell, and you are listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston with my guest, Stephanie Twyford, Gaetan Pauls, and Sarah Murphy. Gaetan, you've chosen a career that's not as profitable as some, but it's filled with risk and heartaches. And I'm sure it keeps you constantly stressed about money. And yet it seems like you're doing the absolute perfect job for you. Is that fair?
It's a great job. Pin Giraffe House is a great place to be.
It is. And I mean, I was fortunate. I think you came on just before the grand opening. And I remember Nick Economides and I went to the grand opening. And I didn't really know what to expect of the Pink Giraffe House. But what I found was this house filled with kindness, support, and really happy kids that I was under the impression didn't have anywhere else to be, but they knew they were wanted there. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, I don't know. I was really moved by the experience. And I've worked with homeless communities throughout my career, but it was adults who had very different issues. And there was something about seeing these kids that could have been my nieces, my nephews, who all had a safe place to go to bed at night, all have a good food on the table, and have caring adults to surround them. I think it's kind of amazing that in the fourth biggest city in the nation, mm-hmm. basically, it took you and those who support you to mm-hmm. come up with something that is absolutely desperately needed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is even, this may not be an easy answer, but do you mind if I ask, what are the pitfalls of running a safe place for teenagers? What are the biggest challenges that you're facing? I'm guessing money is one of them.
Yeah, money.
Are there grants, you know, that y'all are operating off of, or is it largely private donations?
Private donations, yeah.
Okay, well, friends, you know, we are entering the Christmas season. As we share these stories, I'm hoping that you will look up the Pink Giraffe House, the work they do, and see if you and your communities might want to support this just critical group. That's what I would ask you to do. And Gaetan, your first story is a case study about a young man. And it will illuminate our listeners about why you do what you do. Would you share your story with us?
Yes, this is the story of Anthony. And Anthony, Greg, Anthony's family refused to accept his identity. And as you know, about 40% of homeless population is LGBTQ. And Anthony's family refused to accept his identity. Anthony told me that one day his mother put a gun to his head and told him, "I gave you life, and I can take it away anytime I want to, so you better start liking girls." Wow. He said, "My parents were physically and verbally very abusive almost every day. His siblings were constantly making fun of him, you know, because of his identity, because of who he was. He was in and out of the CPS system, but only to endure more abuse. He said, "My family kicked me out because I don't like girls." When Anthony was 15, he moved in with his grandmother, who also tried to convince him that being gay was a bad thing. One day, they were in her car and had an argument about it. His grandmother pulled over on the side of the highway and told him to get out. Anthony ended up homeless. He found himself on the streets selling his body for food and shelter. Anthony sought validation and a way to survive through these exchanges. He created his own support system on the streets and heard about the Pink Giraffe House from a friend in a similar situation. When he first came to the Pink Giraffe House, part of Anthony seemed reluctant to engage due to his past experiences, but part of Anthony seemed right at home because of who we are and how we are and of the other kids that were like him. Anthony has made tremendous progress since. He's been at the Pink Giraffe House for months now, and he's very involved in our art program. If you come to the Pink Giraffe House, you can see his art, you know, on the walls and in different rooms. He also comes to our self-esteem building workshops. He participates in a lot of our activities. He does one-on-one counseling and coaching sessions that have helped him with his anxiety and identity issues. He has built trusting relationships with our caring adult volunteers. He's working on his GED. He already passed three sections and only has one more to go to receive his GED, which is pretty cool.
Impressive.
Yeah. He has applied for FAFSA, and he has been accepted at HCC, so he's very excited. He wants to study business. He always tells me that he wants to open another pink giraffe house.
You're planting seeds?
Yeah. He found a job at a retail store, and he's now looking for a second job. No, and Greg, in spite of everything his parents put him through and what he endured on the streets to survive, Anthony's biggest desire is to reunite with his family and go back home.
Wow.
Anthony is working with a mental health therapist on understanding his family's rejection and the trauma it caused.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, how old is Anthony now?
Anthony is 18.
Well, sounds like a wise young man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where does he sleep?
So we just recently found a place for him. It's called the Family Center. Is that me or you?
Excuse me, that's me.
Okay.
Sorry about that. That's never happened before.
And so, so that's where he's staying.
I hope to meet him and the other residents the next time I'm out there.
Yeah, he's great.
What's the most rewarding part of your work?
I guess, to see them get better, to see them come and ask for things, to see them, pass part of their GED one by one. To see them, just the smiles on their faces.
It sounds a lot like being a parent.
Yeah.
I mean, it does.
Except your kids are happy to be at the house.
Right. You know, but you're marking the milestones, it sounds like there's a lot of encouragement. And
when they walk in, they just walk in and sit down. And even when they just come in and chill or they fall asleep on the couch, it's the little things.
I have always thought one of the highest compliments that can be given, if someone is able to fall asleep in your presence, that's the highest praise, because they know they're safe. Mm-hmm. They know, they're around people that care. I don't know. That's just, and maybe there's a little of myself in that. I don't sleep easily.
Yeah.
Your next story addresses a young man in a pitfall situation. Would you share it with us?
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of my favorites, I have to admit, Jamie. Yeah, he's one of my favorites, Jamie. Imagine being 15 years old. And now, Greg, imagine being 15 years old and losing your mother and your home all at the same time. Jamie was only 15 years old when his mother, his sole support, passed away. A critical time during adolescence when we all need love, guidance, and a strong support system.
Absolutely.
Jamie has never known his father. As far as he knows, his father is serving a life sentence in prison. He has no other family who could care for him. No one stepped in to care for him, not even the child welfare system. Jamie was sleeping at friends' houses for a bit. He bounced from couch to couch, dreading the moment when he would be asked to leave. He soon ended up homeless and living on the streets, sleeping in laundromats, parks, porta potties, or staying awake all night on the streets to try to stay safe. Sometimes exchanging sex for something to eat or a place to sleep. I didn't tell you, Greg, but statistically, in the U.S., more than 50% of homeless youth are prostituted for sex in exchange, are propositioned for sex in exchange for food, shelter, or money within 72 hours of being homeless.
Wow.
It's crazy, huh?
That hurts my heart.
Yeah. So, Jamie as well, sometimes exchanging sex for something to eat or a place to sleep. So he battled depression, of course, his mom being gone. He battled depression, abuse, and disappointment, and started to medicate with drugs. One evening, one of our outreach team workers found him behind CVS and told him about our services at the Pink Giraffe House. Jamie was very shy and quiet when he first came to us, but he's now very active and shows newcomers what to do. He can be pretty bossy, actually. He's truly amazing, though. He comes in every day, he showers, eats, takes a nap, and gets clothes. He has developed strong bonds with some of our volunteers. So when he comes in, he's always wearing his McDonald's cap. From our menu of services, the first thing he picked was job assistance. He really wanted a job, make some money.
Speaks well for him.
Mm-hmm. And within 1 or 2 weeks, he got a job at McDonald's. He's wearing his McDonald's cap. And he loves it. He's very proud, and of course, so are we. You know, he's working on his GED. He's having some difficulty with that because he didn't go very far in school, but he's
he'll get there.
He'll get there, yeah. And he's attending some of our workshops on self-esteem building and things like that. You know, if his schedule works out, he comes. But experiencing homelessness has not deterred Jamie in his dreams. You know, so he has the evening shifts, I mean the late shift at McDonald's, so he will work late. And then after, when he's done, he'll walk around at night on the streets. And then he comes in as soon as we open. And then he'll shower. And then he'll fall asleep on our couch. And then he'll get dressed. I mean, then he'll shower, get dressed, eat. And then he'll go to the next shift.
And how old is Jamie?
That's how he makes it. He's also 18.
Wow.
So he doesn't have a place to sleep. But he sleeps on our couch, and he eats, and he showers at our place. And he, because he has the late shift, it's how he makes it, you know, to work.
So Pink Giraffe is 24/7. It's open.
No, it's not 24/7. But you know, that's why he takes the late shift, so that afterwards he can walk on the streets, and then he comes in the morning and sleeps during the day at the Pink Giraffe House, and then you know.
What you've described to me sounds like home. You know, mm-hmm. And Jamie and Anthony, I hope you're listening to this broadcast now or later on HoustonStorytellers.org. But I want you to know that tonight, your story is inspiring others. I hope it's helping inspiring those who can to give and to help, not only the Pink Giraffe House, but any kid who they can help. And I want you to know that your struggles have not been in vain. They are encouraging. They are educating. And I think they are going to give you the foundation that you both need to become leaders.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I believe. And I look forward to meeting both of you and invite both of you to come see our show sometime. And you can sit and, you know, you can see the show being made, and we'll talk to you on air a little bit.
All right. Awesome.
I am so appreciative to each of you and to each and every guest who has graced our studios with their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, what we often say is that everyone is a storyteller. But as with any skill, to become stronger, you must practice to learn what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And that brings us to tips for the teller. A tip that will help you develop your storytelling skills and a whole lot more. Stephanie, I think you'll agree with today's tip, which is to practice telling your stories in front of others who will be honest and candid with you. You're only going to progress so much as a storyteller if you get consistent feedback. And this is the beauty of the Houston Storytellers Guild. You will meet some of the most talented storytellers in Texas who will give you their thoughts on the topic, pace, and flow of your story. Your mirror cannot serve this function for you. Even your friends, honestly, it's really hard for them to be honest with you because they want to say, oh, that's a great story.
Right.
Well, that's nice to hear, but it's not very helpful, and it doesn't help you make a better story. I would encourage you, you know, if this is something you want to use, and whether it's personally, professionally, you know, just about any profession, you're going to go farther, you're going to do better if you can tell your story and the story of your organization.
Yeah, it's sometimes referred to the Storytellers Guild as an incubator for storytellers.
That's the thing. I think it's absolutely astonishing to me that anyone who wants to get ahead in their career is not an active part of a storytelling group. other than understanding your business itself, the next step is being able to talk about yourself and your business.
Yeah,
and
I think one of the big things they do with business coaching is to get you to develop your, they call it the elevator pitch.
That's right, your 2-minute elevator pitch.
Yeah, which is a story.
Yeah.
You know, how do you get that across in 2 minutes?
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, it's hard for storytellers to get it all in under 2 minutes. We're a loquacious bunch. I do well to get it between 5 and 6, which is the moth requirements. Now, Sarah Murphy, I got to ask you, how did you come to be involved in the Pink Giraffe House?
Yes, well, I coach currently at Houston Gymnastics Center. And my competitive assistant coach, he actually is the son of Gaetan.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, so he introduced me to Gaetan, and then from there on, I just kept on staying at the Pink Giraffe House.
Oh, why does Houston need a place like the Pink Giraffe House? I mean, shouldn't every kid just, you know, be in their home with their families and happy and well taken care of? Why don't we do that?
Yeah, preferably that would be...
Yeah, let's do that.
That would be preferable.
But that's not always the case?
Right. I mean, the tremendous amount of homeless teenagers in Houston, I did not even realize it until meeting Gaetan and walking into the Pink Giraffe House and seeing and hearing all of these homeless kids, children, their stories, and realizing that I've just been living in a bubble.
That's a great point, because my friends, if you are not aware of the crisis, not just the homeless crisis, but homeless teenagers, then it's really because your eyes aren't open. You're not paying attention. You're not looking for it. And I ask you, as you drive around in your daily life, open your eyes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Look at that kid. Think about your kid, a child you love, mm-hmm. having to figure out where to sleep that night, where to eat. You know, is the best deal they can make to have sex with someone tonight to get food? Is that what you want for your kid? Trust me, we don't want it for any kid.
Mm. Yeah, yes.
Well, I think this is a good lead into your story. Will you share your story with us, Sarah?
Yes, of course. My story is about a young woman named Isabella, who was born and raised in Ukraine. Isabella came in through our doors of the Pink Giraffe House approximately a year ago. She was quiet and introverted. Because of this, she was not favorable to the other teenagers of the house. She was always an emotional roller coaster and showed many signs of distraught. At the same time, though, she was very sweet and approachable, and she really enjoyed long talks with me. Little by little, she opened up to me about her life, and it was eye-opening. She was adopted by the age of 8 to an American family of 11 children. So, as if coming to a foreign country is not enough emotional stress, there was, I guess, a lot more problems after the adoption. The adoptive parents held Isabella responsible for caring for her younger siblings and forced her at times to be even locked up, and at one point she was even living in a closet. Her parents, along with her older brothers, began to emotionally and physically and sexually abuse Isabella for years. The parents kept her at home for homeschooling to actually conceal the effects of the abuse. She tried as much as she could to get out of her situation, including running away from home, and the last time she did that, kind police officer finally gave her information about a young adult emergency shelter. When she called them, they told her she had to be at least 18 years old, but at least this gave her some hope. So she decided to go back home, deal with the terror she dealt with every day until her 18th birthday, when she packed her bags and she left her abusive home forever. At the emergency shelter, she heard about a drop-in center, which is the Pink Giraffe House, and the very next day, she came by. After opening up to me gradually about her life and all she's survived through with the abuse, I began to understand her introverted demeanor brought on by her abusive past. She was a scared and lonely and young girl that had only learned to fear and mistrust everybody. After much work at the Pink Giraffe House due to her great self-motivation and the caring volunteers, she was improving greatly at each of our four components of her case management plan. So every teenager at the Pink Giraffe House has an individualized case management plan that includes the following. It's well-being, education, job assistance, and housing. As for Isabella, attending all of our group activities and mentoring sessions, her self-worth and self-esteem and self-love began to become present and also very noticeable. She also wanted so much to become independent, and the Pink Giraffe House helped her land her first job at a local cafe. So there were a lot of steps involved with getting her that job. For instance, she needed an ID, which she didn't have. But in order to get your ID, you need a birth certificate, which she also didn't have. So we had to contact the Ukrainian consulate and so on and so forth. But eventually she landed her job. And while all of this is going on, she's studying for her GED with the help of our GED tutors at the Pink Giraffe House. And she eventually passed her GED and applied for FAFSA and is currently doing really well at Houston Community College.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. Eventually, she became eligible for our host family program, where we found her a warm and supportive family where she continues to live today. Due to her stable living situation, she no longer has to work, allowing her to attend college full-time and continue to focus on her ever-improving well-being. So she actually still comes by the Pink Giraffe House pretty often as kind of an alumnus. She's an amazing inspiration to all of the kids and us, to everybody. That really shows the kids that with ambition and hard work and a little bit of help, you can get past even your most difficult present.
Wow. I marvel or am just horrified to think, where would she be without the Pink Giraffe House? And I don't want to embarrass you, Gaetan, but if you hadn't chosen to create this, you know, where would Anthony, where would Jamie, where would Isabella be, and the hundreds of kids that you haven't had a chance to tell us about? This is urgent, and I hope it tugs at your heartstrings as much as it is tugging at mine, but that is not enough. It is not enough for you to feel bad. That's actually a complete waste of your time. Mm-hmm. You know, don't spend any energy feeling bad. Do something, because you can, we can.
Yeah. Jamie, for example, Jamie and some of our kids, but Jamie qualifies for our host home program.
What is the host home program?
So the host home program connects homeless youth with adults in the community who are willing to open their home and hearts to homeless youth and provide them with a room, you know, safe housing and support for 3 months to 6 months, three to 6 months commitment. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for a host family for Jamie.
Right.
What heroes. Yeah. What heroes. Around how many families do you have involved in this right now?
Well, whoever is willing to open their homes and hearts.
Well, I hope that is something that everyone will consider. You know, I mean, everybody wants and needs the same thing. And I think young people more than anyone else, they need to be connected. They need to know they belong somewhere.
Right.
They need to know someone gives a damn about how they are doing and who they will be.
Absolutely. Because otherwise they won't care.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is I think these kids were each and every one of them, from what you tell me, they were doing the very best they could on their own. Mm-hmm. But the story changed when people cared.
Right.
I mean, that's what each and every one of your stories says to me.
Right. You know, if you throw love at someone, you're going to get love back. If you throw...
It doesn't diminish. The well doesn't go dry.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. But if you throw anger or abuse at someone, you're going to get anger back. You know, and these kids, when they were abused in their homes, you know, they've just received a lot of hate. But if you give them love and care... These kids are awesome. I mean, they respond so well.
Yes.
They're just blossoming, and they're just amazing. And, to answer your question before, that's what I see when these kids, we have some amazing volunteers, and these kids, they respond so well to what we give them. This is beautiful.
It's a beautiful transformation.
People are always asking me, aren't you afraid they're going to steal? Aren't you afraid? And I'm like, these kids, they don't steal. They don't, because
right.
they respect us because we mm-hmm. respect them.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, I want to thank, Sarah and Gaetan for the work you're doing that I think every one of us should be doing more of. And I want to thank you for sharing not just the stories, but these three very special individuals,
mm-hmm.
I think we all feel we know them a little bit. And is it Isabella?
Isabella, yes.
Isabella, the same thing goes for you that I said about Jamie and Anthony. Are what heroes look like, and, we would love to host you in the studio anytime.
Yeah.
I am certain that each and every one of you have powerful stories to tell.
Yeah, well, there are a lot more stories.
Yes, we had to pick and choose.
Yeah. What kind of things do you guys need? Do you need more volunteers, or is it just money and homes?
Yeah,
and
we know money, of course, is always the big one.
Sure.
Yeah, we need more volunteers.
And what do volunteers do?
We need board members.
Yeah.
What do volunteers do? Volunteers, we need people who are willing to commit for 3 hours a week, and who will come consistently, because these kids have been abandoned. Mm. So we don't want to have strangers in the house.
Right.
So if the kid knows, every Tuesday Sarah's there, and so they know on Tuesdays they come in and they know Sarah is there. And so that's why it's important that Sarah commits for a year to be there every Tuesday. We don't want, one Tuesday there is a Sarah, and then the next Tuesday there is somebody else, and no.
Right.
So that when they come, they know there's Tuesday. We want consistency.
Mm-hmm. I think most of us are fairly busy, and yet if we really took an honest look at our schedule, we can find 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
We can find 3 hours a week to change some lives, to help, to be something, I would think. I think almost anyone can find 3 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so the volunteers, they come in, and the kids come in to eat, so we have volunteers to help them with that. And the kids come in and they want to take a shower, so we help them find the towels and make sure they don't stay in the shower for an hour because there's small kids, so we kind of monitor the way the shower works, and they need clothes. And then if Sarah is good with GED, then she helps with GED. If she's not good with GED, she may be, good at something else, and she can do something else. And
I just can't get the image through my mind of someone coming in your door and being offered food and comfort and security when the last person that offered them that may have demanded sex from them for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
I fear that image is going to be with me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, my friends, next week, Dr. Warren Holloman will be our host as he takes a closer look at the holiday season. And he'll be featuring a story by the late Texas historian John Henry Falk, and might even throw in a little Kinky Friedman. next week will be a nice holiday show. And if you're looking for something that combines storytelling with holiday fun, if you're looking for something that combines storytelling with holiday fun, we have the Nutcracker, we have the Christmas Carol, and a slew of great Houston artistry, but please check out Main Street Theater's current play. It is called Miss Bennett, Christmas at Pemberley. It is funny. It is a charming farce. It's kind of a surprise love story for a couple of characters who never thought their lives would go that way. I saw it opening weekend. It's a comic sequel to Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. But if you haven't read the book, I don't think, if I read it, I may have skimmed it or the Cliff Notes when I was, 15 because I had to.
Nice book.
Yeah. So I was not any worse for it. But it was an absolutely great, fun show. So go to mainstreettheater.com for tickets. It runs through December 17th at our Rice Village location. Stephanie Twyford, I want to thank you for once again gracing our studios, and I look forward to having you on again.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
I love your stories.
I love to talk.
I never met your father, but I can tell he is someone I would have really enjoyed having a meal with and some laughs.
I'm going to tell you a quick anecdote. It's not really a story, but it's an anecdote. You were talking before about falling asleep. So when my parents met, my dad invited my mom up to his apartment, and he fell asleep on her. And when he woke up, she was still there. And he said, that's when I knew she was the one.
Wow. Wow.
So funny.
That says a lot about your mother.
Yeah.
I'm glad for her sake and your sake that she stayed.
I'm here.
We would have missed some great stories if she hadn't stayed that night. And it is funny how those little twist of decisions you make, you never know, you know, when a pivotal thing. You know, if I hadn't talked to that hairy guy next to me, you know, at the concert last year, we wouldn't have Teddy here with us. And you just don't know. You know, take that opportunity. Take that initiative. Meet the people. You know, give people the benefit of the doubt like your mother did.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Well, the crazy thing, too, is I've been doing a bunch of genealogy and DNA testing, and my parents were cousins. They didn't know it.
No!
They were fourth cousins, and they never knew it. They both died before I figured that out. So,
wow.
Another weird twist in the
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Gaetan Pauls and Sarah Murphy, thank you for sharing your stories, your work, your kids with us, and for insights that both engaged and inspired us. I am proud to have you as guest. I look forward to having you as friends, and I look forward to hearing many, many wonderful success stories about the Pink Giraffe House, and I just tip my hat to you.
Yes, thank you
for having us. Yes. Yes.
And please, everybody, go online right now and look at the Pink Giraffe House
The Pink Giraffe House.
You can find it on Facebook, and y'all have a website, correct?
ThePinkGiraffeHouse.org.
.org. You can go right now and think, is there something that you can do to make a difference to these fine people? The Vinyl Avenger is up next. Make radio a part of every day. And while you're driving home, if you just need a little break from the day, or if you're turning in for the night, or like me, if you're just chilling out and don't feel like staring at the TV, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? Treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we will keep bringing them to you. Above all, be good to each other. Tip generously, even when you don't have to. Help when you can. Mary, Warren, Hank, Nicole, Teddy, Titania, Floyd the Wonder Dog, and I will forever be reminding you, it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
We want to thank you, the listeners, and those who contributed to our successful fall fund drive. This is Interim General Manager Larry Winters asking you to please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to your favorite Pacifica Foundation station, KPFT. This can be done in several different ways. You can call our business department at extension 314 at 713-526-4000 during business hours, or go to kpft.org, or go to kpftfacebook.com/kpftHouston. Then click on the donate button and note